It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I think it's an exciting opportunity for us to now sort of set off on a new direction, play football and create an environment that embodies the values and traditions of this fantastic football club.
Bentancourt!
Through for Pedro Toro.
And he smashed it in!
Oh, that's a great stop from Vicario.
And Kulusevski rolls it in!
Lascelles so freshly introduced and scoring! Now Skip!
Bichaco Romero. He goes flying in again and wins it. Great work from Romero!
Could this be a chance for Sonoma? That is quite something from James Maddison.
Hello and welcome to The Last Word on Spurs. We are your award-winning Tottenham Hotspur podcast. And we are back for the show none of us wanted to do, but unfortunately, we've got to do it. If you're listening for the first time, you can find us on iTunes, we're on Spotify, we're across all major audio platforms. We're, of course, on X, we're on Instagram, we're on Facebook too, where that dreaded word none of us wanted to hear or say, therapy, returns on this show. I'm joined by broadcast extraordinaire Russ Williams, actor TJ Rimini, and Patrick Tyrant returning to the panel. And we are returning on the back of Tottenham Hotspur being beaten by Arsenal in the North London Derby. And look, I said this always on Last Word on Spurs, but just to re-emphasise this again for new viewers and listeners, we do record this show straight after the game. It is raw emotion, it's honesty, it's passion, it's realism, we hope many will find, and it's that word therapy for many out there. So again, we always say, thank you so much for all your incredible support for the show. Now, normally, as a host of the show, I let the guys do the talking and I blend into the background and give you some stats, some facts. And ultimately, it's up to you amazing viewers and listeners to make your own decision about what you make off the back of that game, or game, should I say. But look, I have to say something. For many that have watched, viewed Last Word on Spurs over a number of years, will know for me personally, two things hurt me the most. Number one, cup exits. Number two, losing to Arsenal. And I have to say, look, for me personally, totally and utterly unacceptable to be in a position where, forget the manager, forget the players, forget who even the chairman is, that Tottenham Hotspur are 3-0 down to Arsenal in a North London derby in a half an hour in, and ultimately the game has gone. We had 15 days off to sort set pieces out, and we can see two within 38 minutes of the game. It is totally and utterly shambolic. And to think, in the 2 weeks we had off, Arsenal had since played 4 games, which is absolutely mind-blowing when you consider all those factors. And mathematically now, that result does mean Spurs can no longer finish above Arsenal for a third season in a row. And Arsenal won back-to-back away games at Tottenham for the first time since the 1988-89 season. That just tells you normally how hard it is to beat Spurs away from home in North London Derby. And Arsenal have done it 2 seasons in a row. Look, Ant said after the game, we let the fans down. And in reference to Romero's performance, I have to get what is in him into some of the others. Big words there from Ange Postecoglou. Clearly not happy with a number of his players. But look, I'm going to come back to the guys. I am. Russ, I am going to open up the show with you. Thank you so much for coming back on. Look, Russ, to try and bring a bit of balance here, I have to say Arsenal were definitely more streetwise and tactically more astute than Spurs in the first half. Can I just say for Tottenham, despite losing that game and coming back into it as we saw, you know, we actually started the game really, really well. Spurs actually won a number of 50-50s to begin with. But the concerning thing is that yet again with Tottenham, we give teams a head start. Arsenal, in fact, a 2-0 head start. Despite a spirited second half comeback. Well, look, I'm going to be honest with you. The goals that Spurs got back into the game with, one ultimately gift wrap with Raya passing straight to Romero, and then Rice starting to kick Davis up in the air, to which somehow Michael Oliver didn't see. It was then referred to VAR and given as a pen, and rightly so. But defensively, again, not good enough with many questions to be asked. Russ, how do you try and sum up the mood on the back of that defeat to Arsenal?
We all agree it wasn't good enough. I think for a little bit of clarity, they are a cigarette paper away from Man City in the league. So we have to accept that at the moment they are a better football team than us. They've got a better manager. They have a better plan. And it's just the way it is. But I'm with you to a certain extent, Rick. In fact, more than a certain extent, that, you know, a lot of our fan base, including myself, have lamented that there doesn't seem to be a plan B. So in the 2 weeks since the humiliation of Newcastle, and incidentally, 1.5 games of football, we've conceded 7 goals, and we've had horror results in recent months. What do you think, if you were the manager of Spurs, you would be doing, knowing exactly what the problems are, consistent problems with set pieces, you'd be working on that. But in terms of taking on Arsenal and actually getting a result against them, what would you do? Watch the videos of Bayern Munich against Arsenal. How did they do it? How did they play? How did they set up? Forget about this fact, we only play in one way. Bayern Munich did a job on Arsenal and they're not as good a football team. That's a fact. So we needed to, what I'm saying is we needed to be smarter in the way that we set up. And we can come on, I know we're going to talk about the starting 11 and who should have started, who shouldn't have started. But I think that we've got a kind of coaching managerial naivety from where I'm looking. I could be wrong. It's just my opinion. We've all got our opinions and they're all as valid as everybody else, okay? They are a very, very clever football team and I absolutely hate it. It gets stuck in my throat when I have to say that. Fortunately, my other half who does support them is not here. She is abroad. So I had the sofa and I could actually cry and rage without looking like a man baby. But, you know, the final thing I would say is, and I know we're going to come on to Ange, obviously, later on, for him to come out afterwards and say, well, you know, set pieces are not the only issue. There's lots of issues all over the place. The only thing I would say is all the successful football teams in any league have a solid, solid defence. They do not concede goals. So if we are leaking goals, and I think it was 15 corners we've conceded from, I'll be corrected, but it's around that. And of course, we see it today with an own goal from Højbjerg. We see it with a, you know, free header, zonal marking, nonsense. You would be sorting that out because if we concede goals, we ain't going to win football matches. And there's a really big reason with Spurs. We haven't got the firepower to score enough goals. And that's another issue. So I've finished now. I'm going to have a sip of wine and listen to some therapy from you and TJ and Pat and the viewers.
Russ, as always, look, love having you back on. Very hard to disagree with a lot what you were saying there. And Pat, I want to bring you in. Look, you always tell it as it is on this show, and that's what we absolutely love you for. I have to look in Spurs in a bit more detail at 2024 in terms of defensively. Games played 12, goals conceded from open play 9, goals conceded from set pieces 7, 16 overall for the season Spurs have conceded. And look, when you look at the cold, hard light of day of that game, we basically lost because we can't defend from set pieces. And, you know, it's not just Ange Postecoglou. A lot has to go on the players. A lot has to go on Guillermo Vicario, who looks, again, very uncertain from corners, especially commanding his six-yard box. But I think the most frustrating thing, Pat, about that game is Arsenal didn't actually have to play that well to go 3-0 up. But what they did do is they massively exploited Spurs' weaknesses. Number one, of course, as we've mentioned, the set pieces. But two, really good in terms of the opening on the transition. And then, as we've mentioned, the way in which they broke at Tottenham Hotspur. And when you look at, again, the facts out there, Spurs have now conceded 4 against Brighton, 3 against Fulham, 4 against Newcastle, 3 against Arsenal. You know, Patty, I just can't remember us being that bad defensively for some time now. We've now conceded 7 without reply in the last 2 games. I mean, Pat, how do you try and sum up the nature of, number one, the result, but also the defensive deficiencies we're seeing from Spurs at the moment?
Me watching it without commentary, just watching it myself, and I thought we played quite well. And I thought that we were the better team. And I thought that we was in control.
It's crazy.
But every time they had a chance or an effort on goal, they scored. And it's happening a lot. And something's not right, because this is happening a lot. And I keep saying it. We're so easy to play against. We're so predictable. We play the same way in every game. And it's just easy. It's easy for teams to suss us out and know what we're going to do. And Russ made a great point. Bayern Munich changed the way they play to make sure that they obviously had Arsenal's number. And every team I watch when they play Arsenal do change things a bit. We don't. And we just always keep coming up short. And to be 3-0 down, you give yourself a mountain to climb. No matter how good you're going to be in the second half, you've got to score at least 3 goals and not concede to even give yourself a chance. And I don't know. It's a really weird one for me, because I know Ange isn't tactically good enough. I don't know if he's ever going to change. So realistically, will he get better and will he be the manager to take us forward? But then also, on the same hand, I saw a team today that was really unlucky. A VAR goal that was chalked off, could have stood on another day. We hit the post on another day, that's a goal. We had one penalty, thank God. It's only our second penalty of the season. We should have had a penalty before Saka scored, in my opinion. And then obviously James Maddison and Kulusevski both got brought down. And then literally off that transition, Saka scores and makes it 2-0. We were just really unlucky. But then also at the same time, teams that have a bit about them know how to contain us and then hit us. So, you know, there's only so many times you can be unlucky before you have to really look at yourself and say, why are we always unlucky? At the end of the day, the buck stops with the manager. This manager is still making sure that we do zonal marking on corners. It hasn't worked all season. It's not worked. I can see it. Everyone can see it. But yet we're doing that. We concede every time there's a corner. We're all shaking. We're all nervous. We're hiding behind the couch or the TV or biting our nails, because literally every time there's a corner, a team's going to score against us. And we conceded 2 goals off corners today. Like, exactly. All the goals today were soft. Like, we just allowed Arsenal to pretty much score at will. Like, we controlled possession, cool, better XG, more shots on target, more corners. But at the end of the day, the actual stat that actually matters, which is goals scored and obviously goals conceded, we're yet again coming up short. I'm tired of seeing us be so naive and easy to play against. And although, yes, we have looked good in certain moments, and when a team's conceding 2 or 3 times a game, every game, and we're just so soft on corners and simple things, this guy's not changing.
If he does get serious back in the summer and is given significant funds, you shouldn't think you trust him with those funds to be able to spend them wisely so he get better players to work for his system. Is that where you're at?
You can have the best players in the world, but if you're going to concede every time they take a corner, then what's the difference, Ricky?
A lot of people leverage at Spurs. There's many that are watching this show right now and think, these Spurs fans, are they really self-insulted that every 18, 24 months they can just keep changing the manager?
Ricky, I'll put it this way. Arteta last year, they probably played the best football in the league. They were really unlucky. If, you know, we take aside all the banter and take our football hats off, Arsenal were, I know obviously they did bottle and capitulate, but they played, in my opinion, they were probably the best team if you're looking at the whole 38-game season and how good they were and solid. And even this year, Arteta tweaked things. He brought in Kai Havertz. At the beginning of the season, they weren't gung-ho and going crazy and scoring loads of goals. They were more defensively solid. And then slowly but surely, they started to build. This is a manager who, even though he had a good season last year, he saw things and he tweaked it. I haven't seen that intelligence from Ange Postecoglou yet. So obviously things can change and hopefully they do get better. But when I look at the best managers, tactically they're intelligent. Even Unai Emery, when things weren't working, he changes things slightly in the game and he'll change things to set up against different teams. I've not seen that from Ange Postecoglou once this season.
Thank you there, Patty. Look, we're always trying to find that balance here on Last Word on Spurs. And we all want to stick with one man. We all want to believe that we've got the right man in place that's going to take this football club forward. And I'm sure there's many intelligent people out there bringing you in, TJ, that are saying, look, go and see Klopp's first season. Go and see Arteta's first season. Go and see Guardiola's first season. A number of these managers suffered really heavy defeats. Not only that, they conceded a huge amount of goals. Not only that, there was massive teething problems that needed to be addressed through bringing their own players in, through giving them the players they needed in terms of general recruitment. And there's no doubt Spurs' recruitment has improved over the last 18 and a half months. But I think there is a concern over the nature of some of our naive tactics and maybe immaturity at times by the way we're playing. And the reoccurring themes that, I'm going to be honest with you, for me personally, are deeply, deeply concerning. I look at players like Van de Ven, Pablo Romero. I know these aren't bad players. I know these aren't bad defenders, but we're conceding a huge amount of goals. And the concerning thing for me is that what I'm worried about is genuinely Spurs had 2 weeks to prepare for it, yet we seem to have no idea what Arsenal's strengths are. And it's like we never really studied or watched them. You know, Arsenal, they are a good side. And you just feel you need to be properly prepared to stand a chance against them. But I just felt we didn't do enough from our side to really look to negate their weaknesses. So TJ, bringing you in, I want to know your thoughts on the game and how you see things at the moment.
I think where I am is right alongside all of us. And like Pat said, you know, we are a little shell-shocked. It's difficult not to be, almost impossible not to be. You know, you ship three goals to your arch nemesis in one half of football, especially coming off 15 days rest. And then another result where you get beaten 4-0 by, you know, an okay Newcastle team. You know, they're okay. And we made them look very, very good. So there's an awful lot to unpack here today. I will say I'm not feeling Ange out. For a second, not for a second. When there's a crisis, and we take our football so seriously, right? It's deeply ingrained in us. And even when Sonny did that really charming interview with Tom Holland, and he met Zendaya and all that kind of thing, and he gave her the Tottenham stuff, he said to her very seriously, "You know, this is for life." And she laughed, and he went, "I'm serious." So it's for life. Right. It really matters to us. And even if you wanted to flip an allegiance, even if you ever had that inclination, you just can't do it. It's like those people who say, I support two teams. Oh, I support Tottenham, but I also support Madrid. No, you don't. Because if Tottenham play Madrid in the Champions League, who you cheer for is really who you support. So I'm not Ange out for a second. And I hear what you're saying, Rick. And I hear what everyone's saying. And a lot of people are agreeing with you in the comments. And, the other panelists have also had their opinions. I do think that in a crisis situation, it's very natural for people to look for a reason and or a person to blame for that crisis. We're emotional creatures, right? And so it's just like, well, how could that have happened? I think the pragmatic answer to that, and to Russ's great point, he's such a great orator, such an articulate gentleman, always honored to be on the show with you, brother Russ, is that the pragmatic answer, in my opinion, to that is a multitude of factors. It doesn't come down to Ange Postecoglou. It doesn't come down to recruitment. It doesn't come down to Levy. It doesn't come down to a quote-unquote Spursy attitude. It is an amalgamation of a great many things that this club has suffered from for decades. And so, yes, there are wholesale changes that need to be made. There was a gentleman who was reaching out to all of us on Twitter, talking about Ange's comments about set pieces aren't the problem. How I took that is that he is trying to implement holistic fixes, not just one fix. However, me and the rest of us would say, yes, but except we have an enormous issue defending set pieces. Russ, I think it is 15 goals from set pieces. I think 12 from corners and then 3 from free kicks. So I think it is 15, even if it's in and around there, mate.
Yeah, 16. That's far, but yeah, you're right. 15, 16. Yep.
I think it is. And we can all see as well, Vicario, we love you. I know Mac is a huge Vicario fan, right? Always talking about, I think, you know, we were talking about, is he the best goalkeeper in the league? Guys, we love him. He's nowhere near the best goalkeeper in the league. You can't be the best at anything if you have one glaring deficiency in your game and it's a big part of what you do for a living. If you were a plumber, he's the best plumber in the game, but he can't do jacuzzis. Well, then you are not the best plumber in the game. And so we have numerous issues. However, guys, we are fifth. We're not 15th. And I often think if we were 15th, people would almost give us, okay, let's write the season off and we'll just look forward to next season. We're fifth. So either we flattered to deceive or we're not as bad as a lot of us think we are.
I really, really want this to work under Ange Postecoglou. I can't say that enough. I like him as a bloke. I think he talks ever so well. He's the kind of guy that I want that embodies my football club. But at the same time, if we're not getting better at the glaring errors that we're seeing week after week, we've got to call them out because it is massively, massively concerning. Now, after the game, Ange said, we wanted to win for our supporters and for the club. We didn't do that. And whatever I think about the performance, it's still the outcome that sits on you. I thought our general football was good. It was decent. We controlled the game for long periods. For most part of that, we know we're a team that can do that. It's all about now, over the course of time, getting from where we are to where we want to be. To do that, we're still not absolutely laser focused on the details, the small things that get you from where we are to become a team that contends. And credit to Arsenal, they're there now. And I think this is a really, really key point he says here. They're a team that does the details well. We don't. We allow them to have way too much access to our goal. They only got there three or four times and they scored three goals. It's not acceptable. We're still not resilient enough, particularly in transition moments or a set piece. We allow far too easy access to the goal. He repeated that again. And you know what? Interesting, Russ, to come over to you. He actually has admitted before this game that Spurs don't have, to some degree, a designated specialist when it comes to a set piece coach. And for those that raise this question a lot on Arsenal and Spurs, Gianni Vaio, just to be very, very clear, the guy that Spurs had last season, brought in under Conte, need to make this clear. Gianni Vaio was an attacking set piece coach. He was not a defensive set piece coach. Spurs to date have conceded 16 goals, 16 from, of course, set pieces overall. And that's why there is that overall concern. But after the game, Russ, Ali Gold asked Ange the question whether he can see a trend now with the amount of set-piece goals being conceded by Spurs this season. Ange responded, no, because it's understanding where you are as a football team. If I thought fixing defensive set-pieces was the answer to bridging the gap, then I'd put all my time and effort into it. But that's not where we're at. For us, it's about when I was focused on the details, not just set-pieces, but a lot of moments in games where we don't sense that you give opposition, good opposition, the time and the space to hurt you, and they're going to do that. I think that maybe they had four attempts on goal in the first half and we conceded three. I don't think it's about one part of it. I think it's a bigger, broader picture than that. But our defensive set pieces for those two were very poor. But there's a lot more than that to fix. Could he not have just come out there and said, we do have an issue at set pieces. We're fully aware of that and we're working on them. Would that have been a big, hard admittance to make?
He should have said that. In the Tottenham house, if the basement is flooded, you don't fix the broken windows on the first floor first, do you? You go down the basement, stop the water coming in. And that's a defence. I mean, I think, look, this takes us into the summer. I'm not Ange out, although I think if we get to Christmas time, January, February of next year, and it's still not going very well, I think questions justifiably will be asked. He is an employee of Tottenham Hotspur Football Club. Mikel Arteta has been at Arsenal now for a few years, and we know what he's done, but he's been supported by the Kroenke family on an amazing scale. Once they realise this bloke is actually good and knows what he's doing with the team behind him. So, is Daniel Levy going to give Ange Postecoglou the power to bring in the players that he wants? I'm sure he's got some ideas. And say goodbye to the players that he doesn't want. Because in brutal terms, you know, the Timo Werners of this world probably are not going to be at the club if we want to get better and actually improve. And there's a lot of them as well. But is he going to be brutal enough to say to some of his coaches, sorry, boys, you know, we just have been too vulnerable across so many games. We're not playing as I want us to play, and I'm going to bring in some new coaches. You know, I mean, that is a very reasonable question to ask. But he can't keep coming out in press conferences after the game. And if it's gone badly, he tends to navel gaze, doesn't he, when he's talking, you know, reporters there, and mumble away. And sort of say, well, I don't think it's as big a problem as other things. You know, there's a whole load of problems that we've got. You know, Pat was absolutely right. The buck does stop with him. And you would have thought that Ange Postecoglou would know that even though they're doing well, it's in Arsenal's DNA to wobble when they're under pressure. It goes back to the point I made about watching how Munich played them twice. You know, and Munich aren't as good as Arsenal. Fact. You know, even with Harry, they're not. And when they're on song, but they were stopped. And Munich turn up in the semi-finals of the Champions League. Thank goodness, by the way. But to come out and sort of generalise, when people like Ali Gold are trying to actually ask the questions that he thinks are obvious and the fans want an answer to, I think you've got to be very careful there because, you know, after a while you run out of goodwill. And I'm with you, Rick, that, you know, I think he's a great bloke. I think he's a lovely human being. I think he's got a pretty reasonable football track record. But when I dared to say about a month ago, well, you know, Scotland and Japan are not exactly the Premier League, and I think he's finding that out. You know, I was told that by some people that I was patronising. I'm not patronising to him at all. I'm just stating what appears to my eyes and many other people's eyes to be the harsh truth of how we are playing. Now, we could have the tactics right and the players are not listening. Different discussion. Mm-hmm. Players don't understand. Different discussion. So that's where I think we are. You know, it's a difficult one to put your finger on, apart from when you look at the results.
Yep. I mean, it's hard because, again, I'll also say this here, you know, for those that watch this show and watching it live or listening back, you know, there's a genuine love for what Ange Postecoglou brought to Spurs from the start of the season. No one's denying that. No one's dismissing that. He's the kind of guy I think many would absolutely love have managing your football club. I'm talking about from just a human being perspective, right? If you're looking at somebody that you want to embody who you would like to manage your football club, this guy is it. He's everything. He's respectful. He understands the fans' opinions. He doesn't ram it down your throat when you've had a defeat. He allows you to feel the way you want to feel. There's been times under Jose, under Conte, where quite honestly, let's be honest about it, some of those managers weren't very much, I'd say, open to the way players or fans, should I say, feel. But I want to ask you, TJ, because this has come up on a number of occasions, that Ange explained that from his perspective, he wants all aspects of his side to be integrated, which is why he does not feel comfortable hiring specialists to coach one particular area, such as set pieces. He said at the time, I've never had a specific set piece coach. I've always had someone who's responsible for that. I always think it's better if that's somebody who's part of the coaching staff, but that's an extension of how we play our football. I don't separate set pieces from anything else we do in terms of the team we want to be. It all hopefully links in. Here we've split the roles between myself, Millie Jedinak, Ryan Mason in terms of attacking and defensive set pieces. And they put a lot of work into those with the analysis staff. I'm sure every club does. Some have gone down the specialised route, which I totally understand. Mm. Do you look at Spurs and feel this should be an area where we have a genuine specialist looking after it when you look at the amount of goals Spurs have conceded?
Yes. And I think that this is part of the frustration, is that if you see, to Russ's analogy of the basement being flooded, you know, turn the water off, plug that leak. And the problems at Tottenham are almost systemic now because we've had so long without the success, without the trophies, that a club of our size and stature, with the history that we have, unless we're all deluded, and genuinely, are we all deluded? Are we not seeing the reality of our club? But then if I take allegiances aside and I do look at the structure and I look at the infrastructure of the club and I look at the potential of the club and I look at the amount of money that has been spent and then the amount of money that hasn't been spent. The fact that we didn't bring Leandro Trossard into the club and he is, does he start or does Martinelli start? I do look at a glaringly obvious, erroneous part of the club. And I say, mate, you've got to fix that. I do think that a lot of that could come down to one person, and that is Vicario. Just be stronger, mate. Just be stronger physically. If you don't have the weight, again, I do want to state, however, there are holistic fixes at Tottenham that need to be changed. Again, Russ, while you're talking so articulately, Pat, you, Ricky, all of the people chiming in, all of our listeners and watchers, we have multiple issues here. And brother Russ, when you said, I can't put my finger on it, because, mate, you'd need at least 10 to try to put your fingers on all of the issues that we have at Tottenham. And I genuinely believe the number one issue we have at Tottenham is systemic. We are kind of, quote unquote, we lose too much. We get to the point where we just don't get it over the line. I do believe as soon as we can make that change, and I do think Ange could be the guy to do it, I don't think it's going to be fair to judge him until Daniel Levy and the board write a check. Write a check. Arsenal have spent £800 million. Write a check. Get him some of the players that he wants. Get rid of some of the players that we all know should have left this club a long time ago. Get rid of some of them. Just cancel their contracts like they did with Nicolas Pepe. And he cost £85 million back in the day. And they just cancelled his contract. Be ruthless. Get these people out. Get some new people in. And then let's see what Ange can do. And if it's not happening at the end of next season, maybe Christmas of the season following, then we can start to have conversations. Maybe this isn't our guy. But give us a chance. Build a team that we can actually get behind, that look like they could win something.
I realise it's incredibly difficult after such a frenetic game to try and break it all down. But with the dust starting to settle, what do you make of the performance today?
It's a disappointing outcome for us. It's a big day for the club, big day for our fans, and we didn't get the outcome we wanted, so it's obviously a very disappointing day.
Difficult to break down individual performances, but if it's okay, I'd like to just throw one at you, because I thought Kuti Romero today, just he really got the crowd on their feet with both the goal, but also his general attitude towards the derby.
Yeah, no, Kuti was outstanding, and we just needed more of it from others.
And George, what was said at half-time? Because obviously we're 3-0 down, it's the derby, we want to go out there all guns blazing, but there's a risk to that. But, I mean, obviously we end up 3-2 and we really took it to them in the second half.
Yeah, I just felt we owed something to the supporters. You can go out second half and accept your fate and just say it's not your day, but, we had to show some resilience and fight just for our supporters more than anything else. And I didn't prepare the lads, they did that.
And what did you want to see in the second half when you made those substitutions? Perhaps are one of those who came on at half-time.
Oh, look, nothing really. I mean, it wasn't about substitutions. It was just about our general sort of understanding of, big games, big moments. We just lacked some focus today, particularly in the first half, in those key moments. And, it's stuff we've got to learn, and sometimes you got to feel the pain of it to learn that lesson properly.
And how is Timo Werner? Ange, he came off in the first half.
Yeah, I'm not sure, mate. I think he felt his hamstring, but we'll find out the extent of it.
Down at pitch level, it's so hard to see absolutely everything that's going on at once. But one thing you could certainly feel, Ange, was in that final 15 minutes, the supporters were absolutely incredible in that South Stand.
the supporters were great throughout. They're outstanding today, and unfortunately, we couldn't deliver for them.
Is there anything that you'll take forward in terms of the game against Chelsea on Thursday night?
Yeah, we just dust ourselves off, get back to training and be ready for another tough game.
Phoenix 51 is a powerful employee technology enabling organisations to make data-driven decisions at every stage of the employee journey, from hiring through benchmarking and development too. The platform provides detailed analytics on the most important asset in your business, your people, enabling organisations not only to make the correct hiring decisions, but also how to benchmark, train and retain them. Phoenix 51, powering your people decisions through every part of the employee journey.
We are delighted on Last Word on Spurs to be sponsored by NordVPN. We're lucky to have had Nord as our partners for over 3.5 seasons. I will sound last word on Spurs. And look, for those that do watch football on the move, on the go, all around the world, it is a great, great tool for those that are looking to catch sport, whether it be over the course of different countries or in different locations. NordVPN allows you to change your location settings. It's also great for holidays. So if you're looking at potentially trying to book somewhere and you can change your location settings, you can get holidays at a discounted rate depending on where you go. You can go right to them right now, nordvpn.com/LWS, to get yourself a discount off there. So in terms of the game itself, just a touch upon the game, which we've not even got into yet, can you believe? In terms of stats for the game, 14 shots for Spurs, 9 for Arsenal. The 2 on target for Spurs, Arsenal with 3. Spurs committing 12 fouls in respect of Arsenal, 16. Possession, Tottenham dominated as a whole with 62%, with Arsenal 38. And the XG quite telling, 2.73%. for Tottenham, 1.28 for Arsenal. I think, again, what was quite a telling stat for Spurs is that Christian Romero, I believe, had doubled the amount of any Arsenal player on the XG, given just how, I would say, attacking that guy was on the day. We're going to come on to him shortly. But again, thank you so much for your incredible support. And look, we're going to come on to the team for this one, because the team was a big spark in debate. And Pat, I'm going to come around to you if I can. Spurs making 3 changes for the North London derby, which I think in essence, Pat, maybe tells you that Spurs don't really know their best midfield at the moment. We knew going into the game, Destiny Adogie was out for the remainder of the season after a freak injury in training required quadriceps surgery. But obviously the Australian lifted the news by the return of Pedro Porro and Richie returning for full training this week. At the Spurs boss stated Ben Davies would come into the team to replace Destiny Adogie, which he did at left back. Richie returned to the bench. And having not started a game in 2 months with skipper Heung-min Son remaining through the middle, we saw Davies come back in. And prior to this game, we know Davies never lost a home North London derby. Timo Werner started on the left. He came off later subsequently with a muscle injury in that first half. And Dejan Kulusevski came a father for the first week, came back into the team. And on the right for Brennan Johnson. In the midfield, Pierre-Emerick Højbjerg came in for only his 7th Premier League start of the season alongside Rodrigo Bentancur and James Maddison, with Yves Bissouma benched before the game. Ange admitted he selected Kulusevski and Højbjerg to start against Arsenal due to their recent performances in training. That team read Vicario, Porro, Romero, Van de Ven, Davies, Bentancur, Højbjerg, Maddison, Kulusevski, Son, Werner, with a bench of Austin, Emerson, Dragosin, Bissouma, Saar, Lo Celso, Johnson, Hill, Richie on the bench. Pat, I'll come to you. Thoughts on the team? Did Ange get that team wrong?
Every time Højbjerg's played, for all of his deficiencies, he is a very solid defensive midfielder. Technically, a lot better than people give him credit for. Defensively, in terms of position, he's a bit more disciplined than probably a Bissouma or a Saar. So I like the fact that he would probably just sit and try and sweep and mop up. It then allows Bentancur to get on the ball and move it forward. And we obviously know what Maddison will try and do in that number 10 position. Werner, obviously hit and miss with the fan base, but I do think that he has been effective more often than not. And I like Kulusevski. I love his energy. I think he's such a skillful player. And I thought he had a fantastic game today. I mean, that pirouette or that when he literally spun to Arsenal players and he created, he was winning the ball back, could have had a penalty, should have had a penalty on another day. You know, we won't talk about Michael Oliver and what he does and doesn't give us. Son down the middle, I keep saying this every time, as much as I love Son and I think he's a fantastic player, when you play him down the middle, you lose some of his effectiveness and you don't get the best version of Heung-min Son. When Richarlison came on through the middle and Son was out on the left, he was much more effective, but obviously needs must, like you said, Richie not having played or started in 2 months, I understand why that didn't happen. Ben Davies coming in makes sense. Defensively, he's very good. Obviously, he's not going to have the dynamic, you know, up and down or legs or wing back, you know, literally what Udogie does. But yeah, all in all, that team was a good team. I liked it. It had balance. It had enough attacking impetus or intent. In hindsight, did Ange get it wrong? Maybe, because when Richarlison came on down the middle and Son was on the left, we did look a lot better. Even when Yves Bissouma came on, he seemed to transition the ball a lot better. Yves Bissouma was really good today, by the way. He has been hit and miss this season. There are times when he does look out of it, but I thought he was really calm and cool on the ball in the second half. And a lot of the stuff that we basically a lot of the transitions and attacking play came through him. So he was really good when he came on. So the subs were good, but that is the beauty of having decent players on the bench. You can change things up. Mickey van der Ven was fantastic. The amount of times that Arsenal players had the run on him and he mocked up and swept up and made tackles. And yeah, Martinelli is lightning quick. And Mickey van der Ven caught him every single time. Like, no one gets any change out of him. And I thought Romero today, again, a lot of people don't get the credit Romero deserves. Like, yep. That guy's insane. Like, in terms of probably the best ball playing centre back in the league. Like, what he does, no one talks about it. His passing through the middle of the field, breaking lines, is insane. The guy can clearly finish. He's a better finisher than a lot of our wingers. Like, one-on-one, he tucked his chance away, hit the post as well. The guy's a problem. He's a nuisance. He's an offensive threat. And obviously, defensively, he's really good. I thought Pedro Porro
showed incredible discipline as well today.
Yeah.
You didn't even get booked. In a North London derby where you're 3-0 down at half-time, yeah. And he's such a leader of men by action and deed.
I think Romero is such a good player, and he doesn't get the credit and applause he deserves. And I think, like TJ said, he was fantastic. Even I saw a little Barney and Romero's pushing players away and walking away. The guy is just so chilled and cool now. But on the pitch, he's intense. And, you know, I mean, him putting David Raya under pressure, forcing him to make that pass and obviously slotting away, I thought that was brilliant. And I thought Pedro Porro, considering he's been out, he was a doubt, you know, I thought he was really good today.
My concern at the moment with the first 11s is that clearly, and it's not Andy's fault maybe at the moment, he just doesn't know his best midfield, because we know Sarr's managing a back issue. Bentancur still coming from an ACL. James Maddison, look, I think the reality with James Maddison is that when he's in his stride, he's absolutely superb. But Leicester fans have said this, that when he's coming back from an injury, it takes a while to get the James Maddison back that he can be on a week-to-week basis. And I think that's where we are with Maddison. Again, a fine player, but we need to try and get him back to that level he was. But unfortunately, we've got to look at that first goal, Russ. Arsenal taking the lead. Saka's near post corner, nodded in by an unfortunate Højbjerg. He was battling with Tomiyasu. He can only steer it, his header beyond Vicario. And it all came after a poor Spurs giveaway in the build-up where they were trying to play out from the back. Arsenal made us pay. I mean, Højbjerg, you could say, really unlucky. But the context is, as we've said already, not to go back into it again, Spurs do have this problem conceding corners. Milij Jedinak in control of these. And Spurs go one down early on. And I just want to share this still, if I can, with regards to that opening goal. Because, again, many will argue the fact of the way Spurs are defending. You can see there clearly many might feel that Vicario has been impeded there. But teams are starting now, Russ, as we've seen really from Goodison Park onwards, to really apply pressure on Vicario, which to me, it's fair to do. And it's up to Vicario to find a way through this. Because, again, tremendous shot stopper. But this is an area that we're going to have to find a solution for. Right, Russ?
Yeah, I mean, he's got to be, for me, a bit more commanding in the 6-yard box. I mean, the thing that was noticeable with you know, the set-piece goals that were conceded was the ease with which Arsenal players just wandered through our defence, unchallenged. And, you know, this is the problem, isn't it? With zonal marking, really. You know, they get in their head, my area's all right. And of course, somebody else's isn't. It just concerns me. They really, really, really need somebody. It's probably too. You can't reinvent the wheel now. You see, Rick, you've got to tweak it in the summer. We're too late into the season now. We're just going to have to sort of, you know, go through the rest of these games. Horrendous games: Chelsea away, Liverpool away, Man City at home, Burnley, Sheffield United, you know, try and get a few points and at least have some European football. But it's really concerning, not only against the better teams, we've seen it against the so-called lesser teams as well, the way that they just can score against us very easily from set pieces. You know, we're brittle. And I do think Pat was talking about the starting 11. I thought Romero was brilliant. I thought Deki was great today as well, actually. Almost looking like he's back to his best. The problem for him is, of course, he can't cross the ball because we haven't got a centre-forward for him to aim at when he used to have Harry Kane. Sorry?
Apart from that, we're all right.
Yeah, apart from that, we're fine. And the other thing was, with Højbjerg, I was like you, Pat. I thought, oh, yeah, I'm quite pleased he's in there. And then I thought to myself, hang on a minute, Odegaard is going to think, well, he's slow. I'll run round him all afternoon. But if you put Basuma in there,
I hate to say this, Russ. I mean, you might have heard it. Paul Merson in the build-up. I really, really hoped. I really hope Højbjerg was going to have one of those games to shut him up, because yes, he was going on and on in the build-up to this game.
Really? What was he saying?
About just the nature of Højbjerg wouldn't have been the right choice for Spurs. He slows them down. Defensively, okay, he's caught out. And now, on behold, the first corner, he goes and heads one in the back of his net. I mean, you couldn't make it up. It literally was like, you know, the gods were watching us, and it goes in. I mean, look, in terms of the way Spurs respond, as Pat put it ever quickly earlier, Romero headed against the right-hand post from Maddison's free kick. And then we had that moment where, look, Porro's shot deflects into the path of Van de Ven. He runs onto it. He slams it in the net. For Navarcek, the goal was ruled out. And I want to come to TJ for this. Look, the ball strikes two Arsenal players.
Yes.
And look, before it reaches the Tottenham goal scorer. Now, the first of the two was Takehiro Tomiyasu, intentionally moving his body to block the initial shot. Mm-hmm. Yet VAR declares neither to have deliberately played the ball and Mickey van der Ven to be offside. But look, the reality is, and the still won't do it justice, however we dress it up, it does appear that the right decision has been made. VAR has intervened and it is offside. But my frustration, TJ, and for those that are in the stadium like Pat was, is that the time it took to get this decision, you're looking at 2.5 minutes, the fans were booing, even because I think the fans were feeling that ultimately they knew what was coming. But it's as you can see, it's so borderline here, isn't it? So borderline, the decision, TJ. What frustrates you more, the VAR decision or the fact we've got to wait 2.5 minutes to get the judgment?
This was a huge bone of contention for me personally. Rick, as you know, I'm on this show regularly, right? Which I'm enormously appreciative of. One of the things that I tend to not do and I don't really subscribe to is the constant moaning about VAR decisions. You know, we have it. It's imperfect. We all know that. Sometimes it goes for you. Sometimes it goes against you. I was on the show the day after that Liverpool game where there was a terrible VAR decision and they were literally acting like, you know, World War III had just been declared. It was a poor decision. It didn't work out. You lost the game. Sometimes you get them, sometimes you don't. However, my issue with this goal wasn't the offside, whether he's offside or not by a toenail or whatever it is the fact that the rules of the game stipulate that as an opposing player, if you make what's called a good or a positive action to play the ball, and it ends up at the feet of an opponent, whether they are offside or not, the offside is rendered mute. So Van de Ven could have been smoking a cigarette in the six-yard box, chatting it up with Raya, and the ball comes to him and he could have tapped it in, and it just doesn't matter. The fact that it came off two Arsenal players who were trying to clear the ball, obviously they were under pressure, they just had a corner, Porro fires it in, you're trying to clear your lines, which is a positive action, and it ends up at the feet of an opponent. It's a goal. So to not know the rules, that's not subjective. Like some people are saying the trip on Deki, that should have been given a penalty. It shouldn't have been given a penalty. To be honest, I'm okay to let that one go because it's so subjective. Even though the fact they went up the other end and scored, that one was so subjective. But the rules clearly state that if an opposing player makes a positive attempt to play the ball and it ends up in an opponent's feet and they knock it into the goal, it's a goal, whether you were offside or not. There's no need for the lines. There's no need for VAR. There's no need for an offside call. Did it come off an Arsenal player? It came off two. Were they trying to play it intentionally? Yes. Goal. The end.
I think the pivotal nature of that is, I think at Spurs gone at 1-1, I think it's a totally and utterly different game. I genuinely do. And I know it's easy to say that because, again, you're playing against a side that are right towards the top of the Premier League. But again, to have that frustration where you don't get the goal is really, really disheartening. And ultimately then, you have this crazy 30 seconds where Spurs wanted a penalty in the build-up as Kulusevski went down, but play carried on. Spurs get counted on. Saka cuts inside Davis and finishes into the far corner. Now, VAR did check the Kulusevski incident and they deemed it as though there was not enough contact for a penalty. The contact was minimal, but substantial. He breaks his stride. He's able to stay on his feet. So again, it's really, again, you could argue 50-50 on this. Dawson said, for me, that's a penalty on Kulusevski. He tried to be honest. and stay on his feet. Answered after the game from his perspective, look, it doesn't matter how I saw it. What matters is what I've said all along. Referees are now no longer refereeing the games in a stadium anymore. They're refereed somewhere else and they will convince me otherwise. It's not even re-refereed. It's refereed somewhere else. That's why I don't celebrate goals anymore. I wait for somebody down the road. I just don't think the referees in the stadium anymore have the authority they used to make decisions, and then you go with it. I'll just wait and see what the bloke down the road thinks. It's a shame. I don't like it, but it's here to stay, and I've got to accept it like everybody else. And you know what? We'll come on to that in a second, but I think the concern was the way, if I can bring Russ in, Russ, that the way Spurs lost their shape for that second goal. Yes, it was a moment of real frustration by the element of the way Arsenal broken us, but to not have the general focus, which Ange touched upon, play the game, not the moment, not that aspect, to carry on playing, which Spurs didn't arguably do. You could say as a trait of a young side with a lack of experience, no one tracked Saka. No one did. What was more frustrating, Russ? The fact we didn't get the decision or the fact we didn't track the runner for the second goal?
Well, second one. Really, I mean, I didn't think either of those were penalties, if I'm honest, but it's only my opinion. But the, you know, there was a crossfield ball. It was on. We all saw it, and bingo, there it was. Ben Davis, all he can do is backtrack. Saka does what he does. Vicario comes out a little bit. There's a gap. Bosh, goal, you know. I mean, it's what top players do. I mean, I do think that there isn't... You know, we wouldn't have lost the ball in that area in the first 10 or 11 games of the season when everybody was playing well. But, you know, I think it has to be said that Maddison and even Sonny, that, you know, I know he got a terrific penalty today, but, you know, recently he's been way off his game. And James Maddison, you know, we're very excited when James came into the club. He wanted to be at Spurs. He wants to be at Spurs. We want him to be a success. But there weren't other clubs, big clubs, queuing up for him. And, you know, this is worrying. His form is absolutely pivotal to this football team. So I think it's a case, you know, that it isn't working in midfield. And once it breaks down there, even when we're attacking, it's vulnerable. Time and you know, Ange, I think, probably knows his best midfield in his mind. The trouble is, they're all not playing very well, most of them, you know, and it is a big issue. And it's not just an issue for the Newcastle game or the game today, it's been an issue for quite a few games now, since almost the turn of the year, in my opinion. But so, yes, no penalties for me. Should somebody have helped Ben Davis and tracked him? Well, Nicky van de Ven would have been that man, I suppose, but he was further up the pitch, wasn't he? You know, but that's the way Ange wants to play football, so you can't have everything.
I mean, look, again, coming over to you, Pat, another Spurs set piece with a goal conceded. Havertz leaping high, too much room to head over from a corner, 3-0 to Arsenal. And, you know, really at that point, Pat, hadn't really been that kind of half. I mean, Spurs really controlled a lot of the possession. But again, we go back to the set pieces. I know we've gone into it already on this show, but you know, we had 15 days, Pat, 15 days to sort set pieces. 2 weeks off, we can see two corners in 38 minutes. And you have to ask, again, why is no one picking up Ben White, who is blocking Vicario? And again, I will just say again, you know, for those that are questioning it, you can see, and it's still here, there's Havertz with his hands placed, it looks like, on Mickey van der Ven's back. Again, you could argue it's 6-1, half a dozen the other when you steal it. But, Pat, you know, how concerning is it, Pat? And you said it earlier. You feel with every conceding of a corner, Spurs, Pat, are so susceptible to conceding the goal.
Yeah, it's really worrying because it's been like this for a long time. I don't know. I don't recall the trigger point. I think it was maybe an Everton game. I'm not sure when it first happened. But ever since someone sussed us out and stuck somebody on the goalkeeper and saw what happened and how flustered Vicario was in that game, literally every team's done it. And this is what I mean by managers and teams and even players just being tactically astute and aware of what teams are weak at, what certain parts of their game, and changing it. Because when Arsenal or any other team play other teams, they don't do that to the goalkeeper because they know it's not going to work. So unless Vicario changes or unless some of our defenders or attackers or anyone does something to stop it, this is going to continue, and we're going to see this pile on in every game because people know it works and we're a soft target in these situations. And yeah, I fear and dread every time the opposing team has a corner. And the irony is, when Saka hit that corner, I was thinking, oh, that's such a shit corner. This is for the first goal, by the way, because it didn't even look like it hit the first man or beat the first man. And then 2 seconds later, I see them running away and I'm like, what's happened? And obviously it was an own goal, but I don't know what happened in the build-up, but in that moment, Højbjerg got his head to it and somehow it ended up in the back of the goal. But we are such a soft and easy target on corners. And the zonal marking isn't working. I mean, we were saying this 2, 3, 4 months ago, and unfortunately we're almost in May now and we're still saying the same thing. And it's frustrating because we've conceded so many goals, which, ironically, if we would have changed that, we probably wouldn't have conceded. And of course, we may have conceded another way, but stop the problem and then address other things. And yeah, it's frustrating. Hey,
can I say one thing to you? On the back of the goal against Man City, where he conceded in the final minute, for Clara's blocked off, I think the following game, it might have been, or the following second game, was Brentford, where we had Maddison actually as acting as a bit of a blocker, if you remember.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
That now seems to have completely gone away, almost like we've forgotten that we've got this issue that is rising its head, certainly in the last 2 or 3 months. Why is no one, Pat, looking at this thinking, we need a solution to this? Why is no one looking at it thinking, we need a solution? That's what I'm absolutely stunned about. You know, it's the Premier League. It's got some of the best coaches, the best players. And we're just not solving the issue. We're almost turning a blind eye to it, it feels. 15 days to work on it.
It's very strange because even you don't have to be coached in certain things, just adapt to what's going on in the game. You know, like, you can't coach every single situation. Things are going to happen in the game and people adapt to what's going on. Like, I mean, Romero, one-on-one with the goalkeeper, is he really going to be doing drills where he's one-on-one with keepers and finishing 9 times out of 10? Probably not, because that's not his position. But in the game, it happened and he adapted and slotted away his chance. In the game, if you see people piling on your goalkeeper, then adapt and do something. You notice as well, when they take a corner, Arsenal were a lot of the times they're behind the ball, behind the goal, and then as the ball's about to swing in and they all basically make a move and they confuse our players. And like you said, because we're doing zonal marketing, we're marking zones and columns instead of people, we're just all over the place and it's very easy. I think, who did we play the other day where we drew the game and they literally had so many headers on target or literally on goal. We were just lucky that they didn't have better finishing, otherwise it could have been even more. It was Newcastle, sorry. Even though they scored 4, they could have scored a couple more if their headers were on target. And in the end, Shaw, for the 4th goal, did convert one of them. But they had so many chances. It could have been 6 or 7s because of, obviously, the way we defend. And, yeah, I don't know. I mean, we do know. We do know what needs to be done. I just don't understand why they're not doing it. So, yeah, it's a tough one. We've got, obviously, Liverpool, who've got monsters. Van Dijk, Konate, you know, Kwanzaa, they've got loads of beasts, Nunes, all these guys are like 6'3" and over. So we're going to be in big trouble if we don't actually change up. And then obviously Man City, Haaland, Nathan Ake, who's already scored one on us, Gravadol scored a header today. They've got a lot of beasts as well. So unless we change something, it's just an easy way to score against us. So, you know, you can't keep making a mountain in every game, 2 goals down, 3 goals down.
Against anyone, Pat, at this level.
It's insane.
You can't.
I looked at something. Everton, who are defensively nowhere near as good as us in terms of player for player, midfield, attack. But if you look at how solid they've been defensively in the last couple of games,
Patty, keeping clean sheets. That's a team fighting relegation. That's a team that's only just confirmed their Premier League status going into the final 4 fixtures of the season. That is my worry. That is my biggest concern.
And if you look at it, I mean, I just pull up the Everton in the last couple of games. They've kept, like, I mean, they kept a clean sheet against Brentford yesterday, beat them 1-0. Kept a clean sheet midweek against Liverpool, beat them 2-0. And they kept a clean sheet against essentially a relegation candidate / 6-pointer Nottingham Forest 2-0. What are these guys doing in training that we're not doing? How come Everton can keep clean sheets and we can't? Like, what's going on, man? Like, coaching is shambolic at the moment. 2 weeks on the training field and we're still conceding in the same manner. So what did we work on?
I think when you look at it, coming over to you, TJ, and look, again, we're on this subject. So again, it's not going to be the most positive aspect of it. I think it's one clean sheet in the last 24. You know, for any club that has got genuine ambitions of being in any type of European football, whether that's Champions League, whether that's Europa League, you know, forget about the conference for a second. I won't bring crackers in with Dynamo Donuts and Dynamo Cheeky Girls. I won't bring him into it. But the element of it is, we've got to be better than this. And after the game, Ann said, look, it's about now getting over the course of time from where we are to where we want to get to. To do that, we need to be absolutely laser focused on the details, the small things that get you from where we are to become a team that contends. And there are thousands of things that we need to improve. I'm not going to sit here and explain them all, but it's the little details like you can't give a team time and space, the opposition. You can't make decisions or lose focus in any given moment. Even the transition goal, we're focused on a decision at the other end where we should have been thinking about the danger that was potentially at the other side. I get that, Ange, but the thing is, again, I'm sorry to Ali, bless him, Ali Gold, we love you, Al. I'm sorry to keep bringing you into his Al, because Al asked the question. Al asked him, are you concerned, TJ, with a trend of the nature of the goals we're conceding? And in part, look, he's mentioned in there that it is a concern, but the one thing I want to hear from my manager, when you've conceded 16 goals from set pieces, the most in the Premier League, I want him to come out and say, we're aware of it and we're working on it. That's what I want to hear. And that's my concern, that that was not the first word to leave his mouth.
Yeah, no, I concur, man. I mean, listen, you know, I've been on the show before and also said that I always take what any manager says with, you know, several sprinkles of salt. However, it is a political position, you know, when you are the manager, because you are the central mouthpiece for the club. You are the person that people are going to look for guidance. You're going to be the person that people are going to look at when you win, to inspire us, to push us onto the next win. And when you lose, to reassure us and let us know that we hear you and we're working on it. Because Russ mentioned earlier that Ange Postecoglou is an employee of Tottenham Hotspur Football Club. Well, you know, not to be too esoteric or philosophical about it, but they actually all work for us. We are their bosses. They are our employees. The entire club, Daniel Levy and all the rest of them, work for us, because it's our hard-earned pounds, pence, dollars, cents, wherever you're coming from in the world, to support the club. Whenever you buy anything that's related to Tottenham Hotspur, you are supporting the club. So they have a responsibility to show us the respect. And also, even if you don't believe it, have the sense to pay us a little lip service. Just like you said, Rick, just say, we are aware that we are vulnerable from set pieces, and believe me, we're working on it, and then move on to the next question. I do think as well, it's important just to reiterate a couple of the positives for today. I also thought that Deki was outstanding today. And just to talk about Everton and why they've just overturned Liverpool without conceding a goal and overturned Brentford without conceding a goal, when they have a far, quote unquote, poorer side in both senses of the word than we do. And in all honesty, it was fire and passion like that. That Liverpool game, that Merseyside derby, from the first whistle to the last, Liverpool didn't get a look in. Like, they really were up for the fight. It was really inspiring. I have to say, I've always had a bit of a soft spot for Everton. I always have. I don't know why particularly. I mean, I do have a number of friends who are Everton supporters. But I just think I admire their doggedness and this kind of resolute attitude. And so this season isn't done for us, lads. And I think that how we can turn it around, we're talking about plugging gaps. You know what I mean? I think the one thing that every single player, to a man, whether you're on the bench, whether you're on the field, whether you're in the training ground, coaches, all of them, is just, for want of a better phrase, man up. Like, really go out there and say, we will give them nothing. If we are talking about Everton and how they're keeping clean sheets, that's something that we could adopt immediately. Stand up and take responsibility. Ricario, if there's a player standing on you, why do you need Madison or Romero or somebody to come and push them away? Push them away yourself. You're a full-grown man. Take responsibility to a man, and let's see what we can grind out until the end of the season, and then just see where the chips lie after 38 games.
Considerations, that's a really tough one to take today.
Yeah, it is very, very tough to take it, because the way we play, I think it was really good. We dominate the game, and considering three goals like this is painful. And in those kind of games, I think we have to really step on it, and especially in the set pieces. And it's not... individually, I think collectively, I think we have to be really strong on it. And I know they scored a lot of goals in the Premier League this season, but I think definitely we got to do so much better, especially in the first half and the way we played.
It's such a shame, son, isn't it? Because when you look at the game itself and the way we played, I'd say we certainly deserve to take something out of it. But again, you're right. I mean, with the goals we conceded, it's just cost us dear, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's cost the point, also the cost us as the feeling, and yeah, it's just really, really painful. And especially, I think, yeah, the fans, I think, in the especially in the first half and the way we play, I think they really don't deserve this strenuous feeling that that we are almost losing the game. So yeah, it kind of felt really disappointed, but in the second half definitely we can take some positive things, that everybody step up and showing great character. Look, but that shouldn't be habit for us, you know. You can't be habit for us, and we gotta do so much better in the first half. So look, I think we can talk so many things in the first half, but just as always said, I think you just need to step up and make a big statement that we are a grown man, and you take a lesson from here and then move on.
Does the second half performance at least change the mood going into the next game against Chelsea?
Yeah, as I said before, I think we have to take some positive things in the, especially in the second half. They're showing great character, good energy, and attacking always in the right area. And look, I think if we do what we always do, and then I think it's really tough to stop from anybody. So I think we gotta just believe ourselves even more, and even against when you are playing against a big team, and you gotta just stick on your play and just be strong in the basic things, you know, like set pieces and duels, and that includes me as well. So yeah, I think we just gotta do much better, you know. So definitely, yeah. And yeah.
And Sonny, just finally, as captain, on a personal level, can you take us through your process now? It's a really tough defeat to take in a huge game, but we have a huge game coming up as well. What do you do now psychologically to get yourself back in the mood to go again on Thursday?
Oh, nothing else. So just look at the game again, and just be always in the football and just looking what you can do better, what I can do better, and then what we can do better as a collectively. And also I looked at it back again, individually, what I can do better. And also if you need advice, and just talk to staff that who can help, because we're living in the football, you know, we love football, and we don't want to let the fans down. So yeah, just we gotta just step up and just thinking about only football, and just last as 5 games, we just gotta smash everything, and we gotta just throw our bodies, and then we see where we take.
Hi everyone, Crackers here with your Legends event update. Thursday the 16th of May, Woodville Hall's Gravesend, Kent, the one and only Paul Gazza Gascoigne is coming to town for an evening of tales of life in and out of football, supported on the night by James Black and his trusty guitar, bringing you some sing-along anthems as well. What an evening. Please go to the Woodville Hall website for further ticket details, or give me a mention across the socials at Mr. Cracknell, and I can put you in touch with the people that can help you out with your tickets. So that's Gazza coming to Gravesend Thursday the 16th of May for a fantastic evening out. See you there. Come on, you Spurs.
At halftime, we saw Sarr come on for Bentancur. Gotta be honest and say, I didn't really understand that. I mean, to some degree, I mean, you could argue maybe why didn't Højbjerg come off? Wasn't really, for me, doing enough in the game. Romero seeing a header over the crossbar in terms of that kind of start of that second half. His third-headed chance of the game. Richie and Bissouma replacing Maddison and Højbjerg. And what I will say, look, Richie gets a lot of stick from Spurs fans. You know what? When he came on, for me, he absolutely rattled some of them Arsenal players. And I think we really, really, I think, missed a player like Richie starting the game. I know, Russ, you can easily say these things in hindsight, but I just wonder, Russ, you know, players like Richarlison, he absolutely lives off a scrap. We saw it in the second half with that incident late on. And I just wonder with someone like Richarlison whether this might have been a better game for him to start.
I think there's a really good case for that. I mean, he was a menace, wasn't he, when he came on? And they didn't like having to play against him. And that goes back to what we were talking about at the very, very beginning of the show, you know, the starting lineup, the mental attitude, the personnel you're going to pick. And the reality is we do not have a centre-forward, as we all know. But Richie is about the closest we have got to a centre-forward. And, okay, he might not have been fully fit. Well, you know, I think it was Merson who actually said, wasn't it, if you're not fit, you shouldn't be on the bench. So, you know, if he's right on that, then Richie could have played. But, you know, Ange chose not to do it. It was Sonny down the middle. And I think he, compared to the old days, he gets lost now down the middle. So I was surprised it didn't happen at half-time, personally.
Look, Spurs did find their way back into the game. Romero, to be fair, look, he'd been pressed like an absolute, Russ used the word menace, but an absolute madman in that second half. And he got his ball playing pretty much as a centre-back to some degree. Rea fluffed a kick right at him. He finished well into the bottom left-hand corner. Patty, 3-1, that goal going in. Was there an element of any kind of hope, or was it just trying to really get some pride back into what was a damaging first half, as we all know?
No, definitely. When Romero scored, we were hopeful in the stadium because it was a bit subdued. You know, we went in 3-0 down at half-time and we were the better team in most parts other than obviously them scoring the goal. It kind of like the game was lulling out. It was just petering out because Arsenal were 3-0 up. They didn't have to do anything. And we had the ball, but we weren't really causing them problems. We weren't testing the goalkeeper. We weren't getting them behind. We weren't forcing them to scramble or putting them under pressure, basically. But when Romero scored, we all felt like, you know what, maybe we can do something. Because we weren't playing badly, were we? It's just, for whatever reason, well, we know the reasons, we were 3-0 down and it just felt like, wow. So obviously you feel, still got two goals to score, but we all felt positive and we all felt like, you know, if we get the next goal and we get it soon enough, we can really, Arsenal will wobble and they feel under pressure and then anything can happen in a North London derby. So we all felt good. Romero obviously leading. I liked what Romero did today because he led by his actions, not talking, not shouting at people. He just led by his actions on the pitch. And I thought he had a fantastic game. Like Russ said, I thought Kulusevski had a fantastic game as well. Son, unfortunately, wasn't really in the game. I mean, it was a great penalty, like nerves of steel as well, because it took ages to actually take the penalty. And the way he slotted it away or finished in the top corner was great. But Son didn't have a great game. But when he did play on the left and we put Richarlison down the middle, it did feel like we could get something out of the game. Unfortunately, you know, we ran out of time. But yeah, when we scored that goal, I did feel optimistic and I did feel like maybe we can get something out of the game. You always got to believe, don't you? It's tough because 3-0 down, 3-1 down, you're still really giving yourself a mountain to climb when you know Arsenal are defensively a really good team. I think, if I'm not mistaken, they probably conceded the least amount of goals in the Premier League. So you always know it's going to be hard to at least get two more in the same game. It's crazy because you score two goals against Arsenal, you expect to at least get something out of it because they don't really concede.
TJ said at the start, we're not ones on here to guard referees. We don't like doing that on here, but Michael Oliver's performance today, I mean, that is meant to be the top referee in the Premier League. That's the standard. And that's what concerns me. If Michael Oliver is the standard of refereeing that we set ourselves on, then how he doesn't see Declan Rice kick Ben Davies in between the legs, quite frankly, up in the air, and look past it, and it having to go to VAR to be referred, absolutely stuns me. It genuinely stuns me. Spurs did get a penalty. Sonny firing home for 3-2. And Arteta said after the game, look, after conceding that one, which wasn't very usual for us, I did want to pray. I did start to pray. Because there was that feeling around Arsenal where it was starting to get jittery at 3-2. And obviously, we had that moment straight afterwards where Mickey van der Ven headed the ball off the line as it was firing from a corner. Lo Celso replacing Davies in the final few minutes. But just to come back onto that incident, if I can, let's go to TJ. TJ, how concerning is that a referee that is literally looking directly at this, he couldn't have a better view of this incident doesn't give the penalty.
I think it's indicative of all refereeing now in the Premier League. I mean, there's been obviously a lot of debate about it. Some of it absolutely laughable. I think some of it downright irresponsible with regards to the comments made by Nottingham Forest. The problem is that they know that they don't have the final word. They're just like, you know what, I'll let it go. And if I missed it, then VAR will catch it. And this is part of the problem of implementing such a seismic new system into a game that's been around and been played in a certain way for such a long time.
Russ, you made an interesting point there that in Sweden, VAR's been ditched. I mean, we know next season we're going to get semi-automated offsides. I mean, there's nobody going to give up on this, though, is there? They're going to run with it now because they've introduced it.
You wait till the Euros. It does seem, on the whole, in European football, particularly Champions League, UEFA, Europa League, that VAR is a lot quicker than it is in the Premier League. It almost seems that VAR actually is how it's supposed to be, because TJ's absolutely right. I mean, the amount of time they take, to decide these decisions.
It's a case of too many cooks as well, Russ. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, there's too many cooks and no one has that final decision. You've got four or five guys who are all terrified, thinking, if they release this footage and I say something and people don't agree, you know, it's honestly the lunatics running the asylum at this point.
Yeah. Yep. But I don't want to distract away from it. We've had bad decisions, as we know. We've had poor performances. We've had, again, poor decision-making in terms of the defending. But just to give a bit of an overview in terms of some of those players out there in relation to that game. Look, it's the most bizarre thing to say, but you could argue possibly Spurs' best two players on the pitch were the centre-backs. We've conceded three and two from set pieces. I mean, it's just absolutely nuts when you try and put that into context. Kulu as well. Look, Deki as well. And let's say congratulations to Deki. He's been a father this week. I think, again, all I could say to him is good luck getting some sleep, bud. Look, Maddison, I think it's hard. We could take players to town on this show, but I think when a game like that happens now, Maddison isn't up to where he needs to be, where he wants to be, I'm sure. It was an underwhelming game from him. Didn't really make an impact. And by the fact he came off, tells you everything you need to know. Timo Werner, 31 minutes on the pitch. Again, that will go on about that decision, whether he should be a Spurs player. I think given the nature of the way this show is going, that's a debate definitely to be had maybe later on in the season. But next up for Spurs is the return, another reunion of Chelsea at Stamford Bridge. In terms of where this leaves us now on the table, which I think is really important to bring into context now on the back of the weekend, Spurs finished the weekend remaining in fifth. They're now 7 points behind Aston Villa. Obviously now with the goal difference at plus 15, Villa's at plus 21, 7 points of difference with Villa having a more positive goal difference with three games left to play. It's looking increasingly likely that Spurs are going to be playing in the Europa League next season and not the Champions League. And I think it's really important, guys, we finish on this note that the season doesn't just kind of peter out into a real negative drab. Look, they go to Stamford Bridge next. It's a ground that I don't need to remind you all, Spurs have got an absolutely horrendous record at and are playing Maurizio Pochettino's Chelsea, where you could arguably say, look, that's where this form of Spurs, to some degree, this inconsistent nature started. So we'll start, if we can, with you, Patty. What do you need to see from Tottenham against Chelsea to give you the hope and belief that this season isn't finished yet? And we can still end on a high, despite, can I just say, how damaging the result will be from this game against Arsenal? Because I know for many out there, similar to me, the Arsenal games are absolutely everything. It's on course for them with, again, cup games and just the nature of them. What do you want to see, Pat, for Chelsea to come?
For us to be a bit more streetwise, we're just not really where we need to be. We don't seem to be intelligent enough to navigate a game. Like, you'll see Arsenal players, okay, cool, we'll sit back and then we'll hit you on the counter, or we'll, you know, crowd out your goalkeeper, or we'll do something to David Raya, wasting 10 minutes of the game, just falling over every time he catches the ball and, you know, wasting time. And we just don't seem to have that dirty streak in our locker at the moment. I need to see us just be a bit more cuter, a bit more smarter, and then probably just continue what we're doing. And also probably as well, I've noticed this takes us so long now to get a shot off. We're taking ages. Like Sonny had a few chances where we could have, the old Son will hit it left foot, right foot and try and get a shot off. And it's like now we're almost trying to score the perfect goal and walk the ball into the net.
Totally agree with that.
Yeah, TJ, it was crazy.
Can you tell me the last time we had a shot from outside the box, Pat?
I know.
Like, why weren't people shooting 20 yards? You know, if we're the kind of team, and we've proved that we are under Ange, we're always going to have more possession, right? Always. Yeah. What do we have today? 67%, right?
Against,
arguably, to right. Thank you, Rick. So 62% overall against the team that's, to Russ's analogy, a cigarette paper away from being Manchester City. So a very, very good side. And yet we never seem to shoot. And also we just don't cross enough. I just think we need to be a bit more positive, you know, and because we do have Van de Ven behind. So if that shot gets blocked or whatever, well, he'll go and get it. Like, you know, you can put anyone in behind and he's going to catch them. Again, Pat, to your point, Martinelli is rapid and VDV, 80
I know, but literally, he gave it. He
was tucking his napkin in. Was tucking his napkin in every time he got the ball. He's like, watch this. With meatballs, whoosh, gone. Yeah. And so we've got to shoot more. And for me, again, that's something that we can practice in those 15 days. I know we've only got 4 days, but let's get stronger at defending set pieces and let's practice shooting from outside the box and leave it
there. Yeah. So that would be for me. I just need to see us be a bit more tactically astute, a bit more streetwise, and get some shots off. Like there was a time when we were taking the most shots in the league. Madison was shooting, Son was shooting, Porro was shooting. I'm not seeing any of that anymore. And we're almost trying to score the perfect goal. And again, we're not testing the goalkeeper. So that's what I'd like to see in the next game.
Pat, thank you, mate. Sorry for calling you up.
Talking about the Chelsea game, I'll give you what I think or what I want. Please. Economy of words. Please. Clean sheet, 3 points. It's a free season for Ange. And let's be honest, we were all
thinking... He won't get too many of them.
Well, no, this is it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Won't get many like this.
This is it now. It ratchets up from next season because he said himself, I want Tottenham to be in a title race. My goodness me, that checkbook's going to have to be big and fat, and there's going to have to be some ruthless decisions made the way I see it. But look, at the start of the season, Harry's gone, he's come in, nobody really knew what was going to happen. We knew that the squad was quite heavy with players who served their time and probably should have moved on. Most of them are there. We brought in a couple of players. Most of us, we're talking about 10th, 9th, 8th would be okay. We're currently 5th.
Yep.
We could end up 6th. If a miracle happens, we could end up 4th, which would be amazing. But I think I'm with everybody else pretty much. I think we all agree it's disturbing form of players, the way that we're playing games. So obviously against teams like Arsenal, for example, who've got a lot about them, and we just don't seem to have the plan. And so, you know, we go on about plan B and plan C in the summer. He really has got to try and reinvent the Tottenham wheel a little bit to make an improvement, and the pressure will be on. So we wish him well, because we can't keep, you know, kicking managers out.
It's mad, isn't it? I think we've not had a situation where a manager has lasted longer than 18 months for the previous four or 5 years. And it's not here to be a witch hunt to keep taking the manager out. But the reality is that, you know, if we were 6th or 7th or 8th or 9th for that matter, but I can see a direction of what we're doing and there's not reoccurring themes, I'm all for supporting that. I'd be sitting there saying, look, but I can see a plan. Yeah. Forget the position. Look at what we're doing. Look at how we're playing. Look at how we're improving. And that is where it comes back to those
difficult
concerns.
Difficult to see. Isn't it? Yeah. It's really hard to see that.
At the moment. Big week for him, isn't it, though? If he goes to Chelsea and Liverpool and gets 6 points out of 6, which I know many will laugh at now.
Yeah.
Who knows? Russ, thank you as always.
If we can beat 10 in 2 games, God forbid. Well, you know, but we won't, will we?
I hope not. Russ, thank you as always.
Thanks. It's been difficult because it's just a horrible game to lose. And
that's the worst game. It's the worst.
We didn't play the worst we've played, but we certainly were nowhere near our best and missed a few tricks.
CJ, look, I think you've been the one here that you are very much kind of in that camp where the man needs those windows, to be given the opportunity to ultimately get the players he wants in. It is the first season. It is a rebuild. You know, again, many say we haven't got the stomach for rebuilds as fans. What do you want to see, TJ, in this next week from Tottenham? Big, big week ahead. Chelsea, yeah, I mean, Liverpool,
just
respectively.
To reiterate, you know, we've had 18 managers in the last 23 years, Rick. So we do have to be pragmatic, and we do have to do. It's very difficult to do. We have to try to suspend our reactionary nature to a loss like this, and to conceding repetitive poor goals, and just give the man an opportunity, you know, to bed in his philosophies. Thank you so much for all the lovely comments that we've had all day, by the way. And just, you know, try to be pragmatic. And I know it's difficult for Spurs fans because we, you know, be thirsting after a trophy for so many years. But what I want to see against the Chelsea game is play how we did against them when we went down to nine. Play like that.
Which I've seen before.
You know what I mean? Play yeah, like that. Play like it's a derby. Play like it matters. And also turn up there knowing we're much better than this lot. Chelsea are rubbish. They are terrible. They're a terrible, terrible side. Nicholas Jackson. My goodness, you might as well have Freddie Jackson up top. He's absolutely useless. So turn up there with a bit of swagger and a bit of arrogance and go, we are going to hand it to you in your own home in front of the guy that used to be in our house. So that's what I'd like to see. Go in there and just go in there and smash them up. You know, like go in there with a bit of intent. And then, like I said, at the end of the season, where the chips lie, the table doesn't tend to lie. If we finish in fifth, that's where we should have been. If we manage to get fourth, great. Sixth, whatever it is. But let's be honest and say we have progressed from last season, and also be honest and say we've had three previous managers to Ange that really hurt the club very, very deeply. That especially the Mourinho and Conte eras, that really hurt us very deeply in our core, in our foundations. So that is going to take a little bit of time to turn around. But keep the faith, keep it respectful, keep the love for each other. Don't try to fight too much with your fellow fans. We all want the same thing. Yes, and long may it continue. Love to you guys. An honour as always.
Well, listen, guys, thank you so much. And look, we're going to leave you with a therapy there. Hopefully there'll be no need for therapy come later in the week. It will be positive PMA coming your way from Russ, from Patrick, from TJ, from myself. Guys, we've been the last one on Spurs. Thanks so much for all your support. Keep safe, keep well. And as always, come on you Spurs. Sports Social Podcast Network.